When people talk about Atlantis, they usually refer to the writings of Plato, the Athenian philosopher who lived during the classical period in ancient Greece. According to Plato, 11,500 years ago, cataclysms ended a powerful civilization, which incidentally is the same time anthropologists recognize as the end of the Pleistocene and start of our current Holocene age. He stated that the capital city of this empire existed as an island nation located in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, populated by a noble and powerful race. According to Rudolf Steiner, quote, "The greatest part of the Atlantean population declined, and from a small portion are descended the so-called Aryans, who comprise present-day civilized humanity. It was said that the people of this land possessed great wealth thanks to the natural resources found throughout their island, and that it was a center for trade and commerce, which in modern terminology meant that it was a colonial empire, where the rulers of this land held sway over the people and land of their own island, as well as into Europe and Africa, and likely the Americas as well. This was the island of Atlantis, mythologically associated with Poseidon, god of the sea, who fell in love with a mortal woman, Clito, for whom he created a dwelling at the top of a hill near the middle of the island, and surrounded the dwelling with rings of water and land to protect her. Clito gave birth to 5 sets of twin boys who became the first rulers of Atlantis. The island was divided among the brothers, with the eldest, Atlas, first king of Atlantis, being given control over the central hill and surrounding areas. Plato was a student of Socrates until his death in 399 BC at the hands of the Athenian authorities. After his teacher's death, Plato traveled extensively, including journeys in Egypt, which is where this tale was preserved, etched in hieroglyphs on stone. Plato concedes that he learnt the legend of Atlantis from Solon, who, in turn, got it from Egyptian priests who said that periodic global cataclysms set mankind back, causing civilized humanity to forget its own history, leaving it in a state of amnesia. In his work Critias, written around 360 BC, Plato reveals the description by the priests of ancient Egypt. Quote, "You remember only one deluge, though there have been many. You and your fellow citizens are descended from the few survivors that remained, but you know nothing about it because so many succeeding generations left no record in writing. The change in the rising and setting of the sun and the other heavenly bodies, how in those times they used to set in the quarter where they now rise, and used to rise where they now set. Of all the changes which take place in the heavens, this reversal is the greatest and most complete. There is at this time great destruction of animals in general, and only a small part of the human race survives. Most mainstream geologists agree that the evidence is overwhelming that there was a massive global catastrophe around 10,000 BC that ended the last ice age and altered the face of the planet in almost every way. For the people alive at that time, it must have been an experience we can't imagine. The sea levels rising 300 feet in a relatively short period of time, submerging all beaches and coastal lands, torrential rainstorms measuring in feet instead of inches, worldwide hurricanes, supervolcanic eruptions turning the sky black and blotting out the sun for months. The human survivors of this cataclysm would never have forgotten it, and most certainly would have told their children and grandchildren about it, and those subsequent generations would have passed on the story to their own descendants. This memory endure to the present day to likely become our folk legends of the Great Flood, or recorded in religions as a mighty deluge. That said, some still claim that the stories of cataclysms were not based on true events, but merely fantasy made up by Plato, and that an ancient global empire was never wiped out because it never existed, as the etymology of the word Atlantis is difficult to trace. But the truth is, he was not alone in using it. Herodotus was a well-respected historian a few decades before Plato was born, and in his Histories, Book 1, he refers to the sea beyond the Pillars of Hercules as the Sea of Atlantis. This rules out any assumption that Plato invented the word Atlantis. He also speaks of mountains called Atlas, as well as a river called Atlas, and of a people called Atlanteans. All of these names derive from Atlas, a titan of Greek mythology, but we also find the root word Atlan on the other side of the Atlantic with the Mayan culture. Azatlan is also the ancestral home of the Aztec people, who called themselves Mexica, where we get the modern word for Mexico, whose legends state that they originated from an island which has several theories attached to it, but has yet to be officially identified. The Mesoamerican legends of ancient white-bearded gods and serpent mythology becomes fascinating when considering other aspects of history presented by Plato on the other side of the Atlantic. In 590 BC, an Egyptian priest of very great age told a Greek statesman, Solon, an incredible tale of ancient empires, natural catastrophes, and a great Atlantean war. Quote, "This power came forth out of the Atlantic Ocean, for in those days the Atlantic was navigable, and there was an island situated in front of the straits, which are by you called the Pillars of Hercules. The island was larger than Libya and Asia put together, and was the way to the other islands, and from these you might pass to the whole of the opposite continent, which surrounded the true ocean. For this sea, which is within the Straits of Hercules, is only a harbor, having a narrow entrance, but that other is a real sea, and the surrounding land may be most truly called a boundless continent. Now, in this island of Atlantis, there was a great and wonderful empire which had rule over the whole island and several others, and over other parts of the continent. And furthermore, the men of Atlantis had subjugated the parts of Libya within the columns of Hercules as far as Egypt and of Europe as far as Tyrrhenia. This vast power, gathered into one, endeavored to subdue at a blow our country and yours and the whole of the region within the straits. And then, Solon, your country shone forth in the excellence of her virtue and strength among all mankind. She was preeminent in courage and military skill and was the leader of the Hellenes. And when the rest fell off from her, being compelled to stand alone, after having undergone the very extremity of danger, she defeated and triumphed over the invaders, and preserved from slavery those who were not yet subjugated, and generously liberated all the rest of us who dwell within the pillars. But afterwards, there occurred violent earthquakes and floods, and in a single day and night of misfortune, all your warlike men in a body sank into the earth, and the island of Atlantis in like manner disappeared in the depths of the sea. For which reason, the sea in those parts is impassable and impenetrable, because there is a shoal of mud in the way, and this was caused by the subsidence of the island." Plato, 360 BC. Of course, Atlantis would not have been alone in meeting its destructive fate with global sea levels rising so abruptly. The legends of Easter Island speak of Hiva, which sank beneath the waves as people fled, while one Samoan legend calls a similar place Poluto. The Maoris of New Zealand still talk about arriving long ago from a sinking island called Hawaiki, a vast and mountainous place on the other side of the water. The myths and traditions of India abound with references. The Rig Veda speaks of the three continents that were, The third was home to a race called the Danavas. A land called Rutas was an immense continent far to the east of India and home to a race of sun worshippers. But Rutas was torn asunder by volcanic upheaval and sent to the ocean's depths. Fragments remain as Indonesia and the Pacific Islands, and a few survivors reached India. Hopi legends say that faced with disasters, some people hid inside the earth, while others escaped by crossing the ocean on reed rafts, using the islands as stepping stones. The same story of escape to dry land appears in the Popol Vuh, the Mayan story of creation. Indeed, the Hindus have many traditions of a paradisal region where mankind and civilization first originated. One such place was Tripura, the Triple City, with metallic walls and golden palaces. The inhabitants of Tripura were originally extremely pious, but with the passage of time, they became evil and perverse and were destroyed by Shiva. This story mirrors the Atlantean tale of degradation of their civilization. But what exactly was their crime? What did the Atlantean race do that was considered so evil? Let us turn once again to Plato. Quote, "For many generations, as long as the divine nature lasted in them, they were obedient to the laws and well-affectioned towards the God whose seed they were, for they possessed true and in every way great spirits. However, the Atlanteans became corrupt. When the divine portion began to fade away and became diluted too often and too much with the mortal admixture, and the human nature got the upper hand, they then, being unable to bear their fortune, behaved unseemly, and to him who had an eye to see grew visibly debased." In an anthropological context, I've linked the Atlantean civilization with Cro-Magnon in the fossil record, and traced their descendants into the Holocene, which is our present age. For more on this, I've included a link in the description to a popular video I made on the subject with over 2 million views called Rh-Negative Blood and Antediluvian Civilizations, as well as a more recent video I uploaded called Atlantis and the Lost Tribes. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon. My books make a great gift. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description section for those who are interested. I very much appreciate it. Thank you. I'd also like to extend my gratitude to those that have been sharing these videos, as I rely on word of mouth and have been experiencing a degree of censorship from my accounts on social media. So thank you for that as well. I may also start doing some question and answer live streams soon, as I've been getting a lot of requests for that, and I receive too many questions to reply to each individually. Please don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe for future updates. As always, I look forward to reading your thoughts, so please leave a comment below. Please have a wonderful week, and I hope to see you again soon. Thankfully, the beaches in LA opened again for exercise only, and by the looks of my love handles, it's not a moment too soon. Not only is swimming and jogging good for physical fitness, I feel it's important to get out of the house into the fresh air for one's psychological well-being and mental health. So while everyone is practicing forced social distancing, try not to distance yourself too much from nature. And make sure to keep your outlook positive and your spirits up. That said, the ocean often reminds me of legends about Atlantis, as well as the Minoan civilization, and also today's topic, the Phoenicians. As many of you are already aware by now, the sea levels were 300 to 400 feet lower during the late Pleistocene, or Ice Age, when Atlantis was said to have existed in the Atlantic Ocean. The glaciers melted in several spurts, with major cataclysms taking place 11,500 years ago, or 9,500 BC, the date given by Plato for the destruction of Atlantis, which perfectly matches the geological record. There were many changes that took place during the time of these cataclysms, such as lakes in the Sahara Desert drying up, and coastal regions of the Mediterranean Sea changing, as well as the subduction of parts of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, where the present-day Azores Islands are located, which is at the triple junction where three tectonic plates meet. The cause of these catastrophes are not completely known yet, but it's believed that one of the probable causes was the arrival of a huge mass of a celestial body that might have passed near the Earth, provoking tremendous tensions in the internal magma of the planet, with magma tides pressuring the thin solid crust of the planet, wrinkling it in some places, and causing sinking and rises in other places. According to legend, Atlantis was the main victim of those cataclysms that contributed to the fall of its powerful civilization, and various ancient texts state that after the continent or island sinking, its survivors went on to settle in other parts of the world, oftentimes around high elevation. Some examples include the Pyrenees Mountains, where the modern-day Basque population lives, a demographic which I point out in my books as being among the highest group of Rh-negative blood type in the world, and in one of my most popular videos with close to 2 million views, which I'll leave a link to in the description, I point out that the Basque themselves attribute their origins to a place called Atlantica. Another mountain that has a people who share similar origin myths, as well as genetic affinities to the Basque, are the Berbers or Amazigh people around Mount Atlas in northwest Africa, stretching from Morocco to Algeria and Tunisia. Plato tells us about the conflicts they had with the Egyptians and Greeks, and how they finally were defeated in a War of the Titans, or Battle of the Gods, fought to decide which generation would have dominion over the world. It ended in victory for the Olympian gods. Of course, Greece is very close to Turkey, where we find another mountain where survivors of the cataclysmic deluge were said to have settled, the Caucasus Mountains, where Mount Ararat is located, and the Bible tells us Noah continued his lineage from. It's clear to me that the biblical tale, which was passed down for many generations over thousands of years, in its original form was not a story about a man taking two of every type of animal on earth, but specifically pertained to the domesticated animals used in agricultural civilization, such as oxen, horses, cattle. As anthropologically speaking, this is where these animals were distributed from during the Holocene, as well as the gene responsible for blue eyes, diffused by people speaking an Aryan or Proto-Indo-European language. It's also near the oldest known megalithic structures in the world, such as Göbekli Tepe, so there's no conflict between the biblical, mythological, archaeological, linguistic, or genetic record in this regard. It's clear that a powerful and sophisticated antediluvian civilization left indelible marks on the people of the Holocene's culture, meaning our current age, after the cataclysms that ended the Pleistocene. And this influence is evident in the Phoenician civilization that was their successor in the sea trade. The Phoenicians inhabited the Mediterranean coasts, the narrow and fertile strip located between the sea and the mountains of Lebanon, near an abundant source of mountain forest and cedar wood used for naval construction. Their religious capital was called Byblos by the Greeks, because papyrus is one of their principal articles in this trade, and the Greeks took the name of the city as their word for book, Byblos. And from their word for books, we get our name for the Bible, which means the book. I bring up the Bible again because I want to mention some Phoenician characters in it, which are barely talked about, yet play an important role in influential secret societies today. The Phoenicians were already influential around the year 2000 BC, but but their power grew in 1020 BC under the leadership of Abibal, whose name means "my father is Baal." You might recognize the name Baal as in Baalbek, another Phoenician city adorned in swastikas and Solomon's seal, or some call it the Star of David. Abibal was a king of Tyre, one of the oldest continually inhabited cities in the world, and the legendary birthplace of Europa, the princess or goddess from which Europe is named after. Abibal was also the father of King Hiram, who made Tyre into the most important Phoenician city and capital of a vast and powerful trading empire. The Bible says that Hiram allied himself with David, king of the unified kingdom of Israel, and built David's palace in Jerusalem. After King David's death, King Hiram maintained his alliance with David's son and successor, King Solomon, referring to him as brother, and establishing trade routes to Egypt, Arabia, Mesopotamia, India, and according to some accounts, the Philippines. This Phoenician trade empire also extended into the British Isles for tin and the copper mines of Michigan, fueling what is termed the Bronze Age. Both kings grew extremely rich and powerful, and according to the Bible, Hiram then built the first temple in Jerusalem. While many are only aware of this temple in literal terms, it has much deeper occult implications, and this strikes at the core of several major secret societies. For example, the tale of Hiram Abiff is passed down in Masonic lodges as central to their third degree. In the legend, Hiram is killed, buried below the temple with secrets inscribed on his grave, which are revealed in this initiation ritual. In an anthropological and historical context, I'd like to point out that this sect of what we're calling Phoenicians and Israelites are connected to the dynasty of pharaohs that are known as Hyksos. The Egyptian word Hyksos means rulers of foreign lands. The Jewish historian Josephus calls them shepherd kings, and they introduced the horse, chariot, and bronze to the African continent. Their origins are from Eurasia or Western Asia. Josephus identifies the Israelite exodus with the expulsion of the Hyksos, and the 3rd century BC Egyptian historian Manetho reports that they wandered the desert before establishing the city of Jerusalem. That said, I'd like to link these same people, this Egyptian monotheistic dynasty, and Israelites with the Templars, the European knights that invaded Palestine and conquered Jerusalem, also known as the Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ, and the Temple of Solomon, or Order of Solomon's Temple, or the Knights Templar. Now, some people get confused here because they view Europeans as Aryans or Indo-Europeans, and yet Hyksos are considered Semitic. So let's look at these terms a bit closer. Earlier we spoke of Noah, and he was said to have 3 sons. Each of these sons represents a third of the old world, but were of the same race, Caucasian, a term which comes from the Caucasus Mountains where Noah settled. Caucasia is an area situated between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, and mainly occupied by Armenia, Azerbaijan, Georgia, and Russia. Aryans, or Indo-Europeans, are descended from Japheth, the eldest son of Noah. After the Great Flood, his descendants became the Phoenician, Greek, and other Indo-European civilizations. The Greeks knew Japheth as Iapetos. In the Vedas of India, he is known in Sanskrit as Prajapati. The Romans knew him as Jupiter. The word Semite comes from Shem, another son of Noah, also Caucasian, same ethnicity, same race. Remember, we're talking about many thousands of years ago. Shem had 5 sons who settled in what would become modern-day Syria, Iraq, Iran, but in ancient times we would refer to as Babylon, as well as other parts of Asia. Ham was the 3rd and youngest son, and regardless of the misunderstood curse mentioned in the Bible, was also Caucasian, from Caucasia, which became the Caucasian populations of North Africa, such as the North African Moors, who were initially Caucasian Berbers, who today have 8% sub-Saharan genetics, but centuries and millennia ago were blonde and ginger and looked like this. When the ethnic affinities between these populations are understood, history is less of a mystery and starts making sense. For example, scientists have sequenced the first complete mitochondrial genome of an ancient Phoenician, and according to the researchers, they found the European lineage in North Africa dating to some 2,500 years ago, quote, very unexpected. The haplogroup U5B2C1 is considered to be one of the most ancient haplogroups in Europe. It should only be surprising to someone who did not know that the ancient Mediterranean, including North Africa and the Levant, which is another term for the Phoenician area around modern Lebanon, shared a similar phenotype. In other words, they were ethnically white people. Which brings us to the meaning of the word Jew. The English term Jew originates in the biblical word for Yehudi, meaning from the kingdom of Judah, or in a more religious meaning, worshipper of one God. After the death of King Solomon, sometimes around 930 BC, the kingdom of Israel split into a northern kingdom, which retained the name Israel, and a southern kingdom called Judah. The earliest mention of the word Israel comes from an inscription carved on stone erected by an Egyptian pharaoh around 1200 BC. The northern tribes and southern tribes had a war, which I won't get into now, but it weakened them both, and around 735 BC, the Assyrian Empire launched attacks and eventually dispersed the northern tribes to the north and into Europe as well as into the Mediterranean. This is where you get the term lost tribes from. Essentially, the Assyrians sided with Judah, or the southern tribes, and so only Judah was left. This lasted for a few decades, and in 587 BC, Judah was also destroyed by a Babylonian king, and its inhabitants were taken into slavery. This is not only biblical history, but documented on cuneiform tablets. The first temple and Jerusalem were destroyed, and its people deported to Babylon. The Babylonians were eventually conquered by the Persian Empire, and the Persian king Cyrus the Great gave the Jews permission to return to Jerusalem. Cyrus the Great called himself Arian, and that was the word he used, from the Arian race, etched in stone by his grave still visible today. Zoroastrianism was his religion, and incidentally is also argued as being one of the first, if not the first, monotheistic faith. So after the Jews returned to the Levant, call it Palestine, call it Israel, call it whatever you want, but after they returned, any other Israelite that also returned until present day were also called Jews. So remember, there were other tribes, and collectively they were known as Israelites. And the Israelites, according to Manetho, were Hyksos. And the Hyksos were the ones that introduced Ra worship to ancient Egypt, replacing the pantheon and the many cults with what modern historians attribute as the first recognized version of monotheism, the worship of one God. So let's look at the etymology of the word Jew again. Let's look at the religious meaning. If you Google it, you'll likely see something like this, worshipper of one God. So when people call Ashkenazi Germanic Jews fake Jews, while they may not have been part of the southern kingdom, literally one of the two tribes in the south, particularly Judah, they still consider themselves part of the monotheistic race, which came out of Egypt as the Hyksos dynasty, which prior to that entered Egypt from Eurasia, or the Caucasian region, or Western Asia. Racially and ethnically, Semitic and Aryan, in an anthropological context, are indistinguishable. In modern times, there's been a lot of race mixing, especially when we're talking about slavery, Islam, and all that comes with that. I really wanted to make this video about the Phoenician presence in South America, but that will have to wait for another video. I'll close this presentation with one final point. I've linked the descendants of Noah, or Caucasians, with the pharaohs of Egypt, with the Israelites and Phoenicians, and with the Knights Templar. And to give it one last twist, I'll extend that line to not only Germanic tribes and royal families, but to the Nationalist Socialist Party of Germany in the 30s and 40s. The European royal families are predominantly of Rh negative blood type. I've already discussed the links between Scotland and ancient Egypt in another prior video, which was also very popular with over a million views, so I won't repeat myself now, but will include a link in the description for those who might have missed it. The people collectively known as Israelites were dispersed or deported from the Middle East after the conquest by the Assyrian Empire around 720 BC. The Jewish historian Josephus wrote that, quote, "The 10 tribes are beyond the Euphrates till now, and are an immense multitude and not to be estimated in numbers." Some of the names of these tribes became known as the Cimmerians, Scythians or Scythians, Goths, Celts, Anglo-Saxons, and Vikings. These days, many of their descendants have been converted to Christianity, so no longer retain any connection to their ancient ancestry. One such tribe is that of Dan, whose migration left their name in parts of Europe, such as the Danube River, or the nation of Denmark, as can be seen on this 17th century Dutch map. Remnants of these people can also be identified in Scotland and Ireland, with some tribes becoming the Amish in America, and others settling South Africa, establishing agricultural civilization there 500 years ago, but today have lost their land and identity to Afrocentric communism and face total genocide. Scandinavian people in general being amongst the most lactose-tolerant people on Earth, meaning they can digest milk as adults, a genetic trait that stems from Aryans of Eurasia who domesticated cattle and disseminated them into Europe during the Holocene, along with blue eyes. Northern Europeans also have a relatively high degree of rhesus negative blood type. According to Herodotus, the Nuri were a tribe living beyond the Scythian, roughly the area of modern northern Ukraine and southern Belarus, also said to be the ancestors of the Slavic people. In the 18th century, the Swedish historian Olaf von Dalen believed that the ancient Finns, alongside Laps and Estonians, who sprung from the Nuri, ultimately descended from the lost tribes of Israel. Quote, "The Nuri seem to have been remnants of the 10 tribes of Israel, which the king of Assyria brought as captives out of Canaan. When one realizes that the language of these ancient Finns, Laps, and Estonians is similar to the Hebrew, and even that this people in ancient times reckoned their years beginning from the 1st of March and Saturday as their Sabbath, then one sees that the Nuri in all probability had this origin." Finland is most commonly identified with the tribe of Issachar. Incidentally, the Finnish word for father is Issa. Which brings us to the Germans, who are closely related genetically to Britons, Dutch, and Scandinavians. While the Middle Eastern or Eurasian origins of certain Nordic and Germanic tribes is documented in the 12th century by the Icelandic historian Snorri Sturluson in the Chronicles of the Kings of Norway. Sturluson wrote that they, under the leadership of a priest chief Odin, had trekked from regions south of the Caucasus Mountains called Turkland via Russia to northern Europe. Quote, "On the south side of the mountains, which lie outside of all inhabited lands, runs a river through Swithold, which is properly named by the name of Tanais, but was formerly called Tanaquissel or Vanaquissel, and which falls into the Black Sea. The country of the people on Vanaquissel was called Vanaland or Vanaheim, and the river separates the three parts of the world, of which the easternmost part is called Asia and the westernmost Europe. Swithoid was the Scandinavian name for Scythia, which covered a vast area including all of southern Russia, most of Ukraine, and most of Central Asia. Tanais was the ancient name for the river Don. Sturluson continues, quote, "There goes a great mountain barrier from the northeast to southwest, which divides the great Swithioid from other kingdoms. South of this mountain ridge, it is not far to Turkland, where Odin had great possessions. In those times, the Roman chiefs went wide around in the world, subduing to themselves all people, and on this account many chiefs fled from their domains. But Odin, having foreknowledge and magic sight, knew that his posterity would come to settle and dwell in the northern half of the world. He therefore set his brothers Vi and Vilj over Asgard, and he himself, with all the gods and a great many other people, wandered out, first westward to Garderlake, and then south to Saxland. He had many sons, and after having subdued an extensive kingdom in Saxland, he set his sons to rule the country. He himself went northward to the sea and took up his abode in an island which is called Odin's Island in Finn. Saxland is Saxony. The mentioned sea is the Baltic Sea. The largest city on Finn, the third largest Danish island, is Odense, a name which means Odin's Island. The Danish historian Peter Friedrich Schlum wrote, speaking of Scandinavians, that, quote, "The ancestors of ourselves, the Germans and the Celts, lived together in Asia Minor." Snorri Sturluson and Peter Friedrich Schlum did trace the ancestors of the Nordic and Germanic tribes back to the Caucasus regions and Turkey, but they did not trace them further than that. They did not trace them all the way back to the lost tribes of Israel, but in 1723, the French Huguenot Dune Jacques Abadie, who lived in exile in Germany, the Netherlands, and Britain, did so in the book La Triomphe de la Providence et de la Religion. Quote, "Unless the 10 tribes of Israel are flown into the air or sunk into the earth, they must be the 10 Gothic tribes that entered Europe in the 5th century, overthrew the Roman Empire, and then founded the 10 nations of modern Europe." 4 of those Germanic tribes, the Eastern Franks, the Bavarians, Swabians, and Saxons, evolved into Germany after the division of Charlemagne's Frankish Empire in the 9th century. The origins of the modern state of Germany began with the Frankish Empire. The Franks were a large Germanic tribe that lived around the Lower Rhine in what today is West Middle Germany, parts of the Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg, and northern France. They defeated the Roman governor who ruled northern France in 507, defeated the Visigoths, and annexed southwest Gaul. Charlemagne expanded the kingdom of the Franks, and on Christmas 800 AD in Rome, Charlemagne was crowned emperor of the Frankish Empire by Pope Leo III. Charlemagne's son, Louis the Pious, inherited the empire, but after his death and a brief civil war, his 3 sons divided the empire into 3 parts. Early in the 10th century, the Kingdom of Germany was made up of tribal duchies of the larger Germanic tribes. Between the 10th and 13th century, the German tribal duchies dissolved into regions ruled by families or nobility. That said, I'd like to reiterate some information that I covered in a previous video about the Templar Society, a German Protestant sect with roots in the Pietist movement of the Lutheran Church. They spell Templar differently than the Knights Templar, but their beliefs also revolve around rebuilding the Temple in Jerusalem, the land reclaimed by the Knights Templar during the Crusades, the part of the Levant once considered part of the Phoenician Empire, and where the Egyptian historian Manetho claimed that the Hyksos pharaohs settled by those that the Bible calls Israelites. I'll also leave a link to that video in the description for those interested in following this line of research. There's a lot more I can say about this subject, but it'll have to wait. For now, I'd like to point out some interesting facts about President Trump, whose paternal ancestry is traceable to Bohemian Amberg, a village in southwestern Germany in the 18th century. Its residents are known as Palatines. Their historic coat of arms is the Palatine lion, with its tongue extended, a red crown, symbols of their ruling families as seals, and also on the Bavarian coat of arms. Bavaria's origins date back to Celts and Suebian groups. The Celts identify as one of the lost tribes that entered Europe, and the Suebians should sound familiar to my readers as in Swabia or Neuschwabenland, the area of Antarctica annexed by the nationalist Germans and central to Operation High Jump, the classified post-World War II military invasion of Antarctica by Allied forces. Johann Trump, born in Bobenheim in 1789, moved to the nearby village of Kallstadt, where his grandson, Frederick Trump, the grandfather of Donald Trump, was born in 1869. This German heritage was long concealed by Donald Trump's father, Fred Trump, after World War II and until the 1980s. He told people he was of Swedish ancestry. Donald Trump repeated this version in The Art of the Deal, published in 1987, but later said he was proud of his German heritage. Of course, Sweden was founded by the same group of people that we call Swabians, and very few people understand what that means. That said, one needs only look at the occult, meaning hidden, symbology of the Trump Tower to gain a deeper insight into his true ancestry. Completed in 1983, it has an official height of 664 feet, but if you count its spire, however, it raises its height to 666 feet. While 666 is called the number of the beast in most manuscripts of Revelation, a fragment of the earliest papyrus gives a number of 616 as the original number of the beast. In a Kabbalistic context, 666 is a positive, holy number associated with light, or the sun, and the heart chakra. 666 is also the number of the goddess, such as Ishtar, Isis, Aphrodite, and is sacred in Egyptian mythology. It's related to sex, fertility, and motherhood. That said, Trump Tower also features an inverted triangle made up of trees or bushes. An upside-down triangle is also a symbol of the goddess. In alchemy, it means water, or the divine feminine energy. And if you look closely, you'll see that the trees are arranged in three rows of six, making up the three sides of the triangle. I'd like to also point out that the tree itself is a sacred sex symbol, from the tree in the Garden of Eden, to the fig or Bodhi tree associated with Buddha and enlightenment, which is really a reference to Tantra. Above this inverted triangle of trees, we see seven pillars rising. If you count the points at the top of the building, you'll notice there are seven, which in Tantra are the number of chakras in the human body. In astral theology, there are seven gods, meaning the five visible planets with the naked eye, plus the sun and the moon. In Islam, or Sufi cosmology, there are seven heavens and hells. And of course, in the biblical context, it's the 7 days of creation. In a more esoteric perspective, seven has to do with sacred geometry, as Pythagoras tells us the number seven is, quote, the essence or first principle of things. That said, Donald Trump is of Rh-negative blood type. I think that's enough for now, so I'd like to thank you for listening. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon. My books make a great gift. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description section for those who are interested. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Please hit the like button and subscribe for future updates. As always, I look forward to reading your thoughts, so please leave a comment below. Please have a wonderful week, and I hope to see you again soon.